Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Howdy, third hour on the show here. Nice eclectic menu. A little Lee Bryce before, country music star, good friends of Tiki and Tierney. He stopped by. We'll get with Justin Leonard here in a moment, wrap up the Masters, look ahead to the rest of the golf season. And, of course, we're hanging out inside of our studio here, the Rocket Mortgage Studio. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can. We'll also get back to the NBA. Jamal Murray out for the season, torn ACL. They're playing well. Now, listen, whether or not you took Denver as a serious consideration to get out of the West or even get to the Western Conference Finals, that's obviously one thing. But, I mean, you can't undermine at the bare minimum the viability that squad had between the Joker, between the coach, Malone, who's terrific, between Jamal Murray, who is playing some great basketball. They had won 8 of 10, and then, boom, going to the whole meaningless moment in the game last night. Knee explodes, done for the season. And you'd have to think Denver's done. Teek and I'll get to that conversation next. But right now, Teek, we can kind of wrap up what was at times for a couple of hours an uneventful back nine of the Masters, but only because, you know, Matsuyama, outside of that one miss on 15, was just so dialed in that he made it somewhat non-theatrical. You know, it was what it was. And we're joined now by Justin Leonard, Golf Channel analyst, 1997 Open Championship winner, of course. That sick putt in the Ryder Cup back in the day. Justin, Tiki, and Tierney, welcome back. How you doing, buddy?
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Well, good afternoon to you. You know, you've had a little time now to decompress. We saw you all weekend on the Golf Channel. Great work. I tuned you guys in every night live for the Masters. Awesome work. And we had Brandel on the other day. And I told him that I think that you've really grown nicely into this analyst role. I think it's working for you. You nailed something before. You were talking about DeChambeau and really just how this course doesn't really seem to fit him. That's one of the things we want to get into. Let's start there. At what point, you know, does Bryson change the approach, or is he just destined to 25 uneventful Masters come for the next, 25 years or so? How does he attack this course moving forward?
Well, I'm not ready to say that he needs to change his golf game for one tournament, and I'm not suggesting he really do anything yet. It's just been two Masters since, you know, he made this transformation, and as I said, I think during one of the shows, like Augusta National, it's a moving target. That's why it's so hard to win back-to-back. And it tends to take players a longer time to figure out exactly how to play the golf course and put all the pieces of that puzzle together. I think that with the amount of downhill, side hill, uphill lies that you get at Augusta National, I think with his current setup where he uses one length irons, they're all the same length and a six iron, I just feel like there's times when you've got to be able to, create. And I think it's harder to create the way he plays the game. Not talking about around the greens, but more with his irons. And so I think it's a hurdle that he still needs to get over.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that I think he needs to change everything in order to do it, but it's going to be it's a little tougher for Bryson for the way he views the game, trying to make basically the same golf swing. That's the reason for the one link iron, because they're set up the same every time. And Augusta National, you got to be able to make adjustments and really curve the ball both directions And so I don't think Bryson's quite there yet.
Yeah, no, okay. it's clear, and it's got to be frustrating for him because he's so analytical. And Justin and I had a Thuzio Masters preview a couple weeks ago, and we talked about Bryson a little bit. It's so analytical, it's got to be frustrating because there's no analytic that's going to teach him how to do it better, if that makes sense. You know what I mean?
Well, if there is one, he will find it. There's no doubt about that. You know, it's just Augusta National, as are a few other golf courses, it takes a beautiful mix of being technically sound, meaning understanding your golf swing and all those things, and then, you know, the artistry of it. And, look, he bludgeoned Bay Hill. You can't really do that at TPC Sawgrass at the Players, and he played great there. He was in contention. I believe he finished third.
Mm-hmm.
So it's in there. It's just we haven't been able to see it yet at Augusta. And at Augusta, the margin between good and bad, you know, it's razor thin.
Yeah, there's no question. Now, we're talking to Justin Leonard, 12 PGA wins. He's got the major. He's got a Players Championship as well. And he's on the Golf Channel analyst. He's doing great work. Justin, I'm just curious. First of all, what was the last competitive round that you played? I want to connect something here.
Okay, let's see. I stopped playing in 2016, but I played one event in 2017.
Okay.
And that was the Texas Open.
So, okay.
Yeah, so it's been like 4 years.
Okay, but you still knock it around. Like you at your club, you'll still go play a little bit here and there, right?
Yeah, I still play a little bit here and there.
Okay, if you because one thing that I've learned more and more and more about this course is that as great a job as CBS and the Golf Channel does with the imagery and the camera shots, it just doesn't really bring to life the undulations and just how tough of a course it is. If you are somebody who's won a major and was a star Ryder Cup player, if you teed it up this past Thursday from the same tee box with the same exact conditions, what is Justin Leonard shooting at Augusta like right now? Like I'm trying to connect to the average hack, to a guy who used to be great but doesn't really play anymore, to the guys who play all the time. What would you put up right now?
Oh, let's see. Thursday, it was windy. The golf course played pretty tough. I think the stroke average was around 74.3 or so.
Yeah,
sounds right. You know, with my game today, I would have been pretty happy if 74 was the average. Well, I wouldn't have been happy, but my guess is I would have shot 78 or 9.
Mm. That tells you all you think. Well, that's all you need to know, America. That tells you all you need to know.
Yeah.
Right, Tink?
It's a tough course, man.
Wow.
Let's get to the lead. Hideki Matsuyama wins. It's obviously iconic for him as a Japanese-born a champion now in the Masters. It's going to change his life, obviously. And I know everybody saw the picture. He's flying back through Chicago.
He's going coach.
He's going, I don't think he's going coach.
Connecting flights.
But he was connecting through Chicago. You know, how does this change how we view him? I know we knew he was always a very good player, but the way that he charged on Saturday, moving day as we all call it, and then held on to win it, you know, how does this change how we view Hideki?
Well, you got to remember, he was number two ranked player in the world back in 2017. Had a great chance at the PGA at Quail Hollow, lost to Justin Thomas, and I think that losing that tournament really took a lot out of him. The pressure that the Asian players and you know, especially players from Japan face, we can't understand it.
Yeah.
Because of the pedestal that they put athletes on in those countries. And certainly a game as popular as the game of golf is. And, you know, I'm just so happy for him because I feel like a burden has been lifted from him and probably from, you know, every past and future player from Japan or, you know, from Asian countries. You know, Dwight Yang won, was the first male to win a major from Asia a few years ago at the PGA. Yeah. Obviously, we've seen a lot of success by women at the highest level. But you know, for Hideki Matsuyama to win the Masters, with the Olympics coming up in Tokyo this summer, I think it highlights the game in, you know, from a world view, and also it's going to make the Olympic Games and golf just that much more important to maybe not to people that play the game here in the U.S., but to people from around the world, it will.
That's exactly what David Duval told us. We had David on the show yesterday. He pretty much took us down the same road. So, you know, what can we extract from the snippet from young Mr. Zalatoris from Wake Forest who, you know, showed some real chops? He's got to get a little meat on those bones at some point, although maybe not. But he seems to have a great bounce and a great energy and a great mind for the game. He hits it pretty long. He seems pretty creative. He seems pretty resilient. Is this a name we're going to start seeing all the time, peppering top 10 leaderboards, or are you still to be determined with Zalatoris?
Well, he's on quite a run right now. I mean, you think of 17, 18 months ago, he's four spotting at mini tour events. he gets in a couple Corn Ferry Tour events. I think either last fall fall of 19 or early last spring, and played well enough to kind of get some status, kept playing well, kept finishing in the top 10. I think he had 16 worldwide top 10s last year. Won a tournament at Corn Ferry, and I believe it was in July, and then gets in the U.S. Open by qualifying and goes on that same kind of run. So I think he's going to be around for a while. I love his attitude, and talking about early in the week, he said, look, if I'm stupid enough to think I can play in the Masters, I'm stupid enough to believe I can win it. And he didn't back down at all. I mean, it was really impressive. I know he's been playing great. That's the first time I've really gotten to see him play a lot like we did over this last week. And I don't know how you could walk away and not be impressed by what he's doing right now.
For sure.
Yeah, no, I agree. So the PGA Championship is up next. It's down in Kiowa, I think, in May 20th. And obviously it's a completely different setup, different, expectation. But I wonder if we're going to see some more of the bigger names play better. This year, it was weird, man. You see Dustin Johnson, he's way down. Brooks Koepka, he's way down. The season is still early. Are these guys going to rebound for the next major, which is just under a month away?
Well, I have no doubt Dustin Johnson will come back, and I think he's going to be one of the guys to beat at Kiawah Island at the Ocean Course. I don't know about Brooks Koepka with his knee, and as painful as it looked for him to walk and re-putt, a lot of the areas from greens to the next tee and then from tee to the fairway, it's sand. It's like you're walking along the beach. And I would think that could give his knee some trouble. And so I know we're, about 5 or 6 weeks out.
Yeah.
I think, and I know he's also a quick healer, and he will do everything in his power to be ready to play. I just hope that he does things slowly enough to where it really heals up. I've never heard of somebody taking too long to recover. You hear a whole lot of times about guys that didn't give themselves enough time to recover.
Yep, yeah, that is true. I wanted to throw this by. We'll talk to Justin Leonard, major champion, 12 wins on tour, Golf Channel analyst with us here on Tiki and Tierney. So all of us hacks can relate to this. There's really no better feeling, especially when you've earned it from the wife and the kids. All right, I'm playing today. I'm getting up early. I'm in the car. I've got my cup of coffee. I've got the music. I've got an early tea time. I'm seeing my boys. Haven't seen them in a while. Like, there's nothing more and I think a lot of guys feel this way too, and women, invigorating for me than that. But then conversely, there's nothing worse. There's nothing more depressing than playing horrific golf where it's going sideways, you're topping the ball. Like, we've all been there. I don't know, Justin. I watch Rory McIlroy walk around the course these days, and I know I'm not an analyst like you are, but I can read body language pretty decently, I think. He looks like the last place he wants to be is on a golf course. Are you absolutely and some of the shots that he's hit, are you absolutely convinced that Rory will recapture the magic? Because he looks like he's in a bad spot.
Well, I think he put a lot of an effort. I know he put a lot of effort into trying to get ready, to try and make a few little adjustments. You know, he just brought in Pete Cowan, one of the best teachers in the world, into his, you know, kind of fold or his team, whatever you want to call it. And I talked with Brad Faxon last week on like Tuesday, and Brad worked with him, with Rory, on his short game and his putting. And he said, look, he's really excited. They're simplifying things. Rory has a better understanding of things. And from what I saw on Friday, he just looked frustrated. He looked frustrated. He had misses that he really didn't fully understand. And so I think it's a little bit, not back to the drawing board, but just get back to work. And my hope is that, if he asked me, I would say, look, I love Pete Cowan and what he does. He's had a lot of success. But don't get caught in a trap of having somebody there watching him hit balls, giving him verbal or video feedback on every swing. Mm-hmm. Because what happens in that is that you lose your feel. If he's going to work with somebody, work for a day or two in a row and then go 4 or 5 days and just do his own thing and be in his own head. And that's how you kind of, you understand what it's supposed to feel like. And when you don't have somebody there every shot, every swing, telling you how it looked or what was wrong or what was right, you develop that feel yourself. And so I'm hopeful that he'll take more that track. I certainly think he's taking ownership of things. Mm-hmm. And that, to me, is the best way to do it.
There you go. Justin, great stuff, man. Really good having you back on the show. He's got 12 wins on the tour. He's got the major championship, as we said. He's part of the one of the stars on the Golf Channel as an analyst. He's up there with Brandel all the time, Brandel Chamblee, our other buddy. So good work, and we'll get down maybe right before the next major. We'll get you back up on the show, Justin. Cool?
Sounds good, guys. Y'all have a great afternoon.
Thank you, Justin.
There you go. You too. Okay. So he's saying that he'd be happy if he shot a 79 or an 80 at Augusta. And this guy's got a pretty nice portfolio.
140.
Yeah, I'll reiterate. Honestly, but here's the thing. If I don't, this is going to sound ludicrous. If I don't bring 30 balls with me, I might not be able to finish.
Yeah, it's true. it's a lot of water. There's a lot of just thickness. It's going to get lost.
It's
that actually would be probably more frustrating than enjoyable, to be honest with you.
I probably agree. And especially at a place where, like, they're staring at you. Oh, how's the etiquette? Shh, don't talk to. Like, if I'm going to shoot that, I got to be loud and I got to be drunk at that point. And I don't know if that's the place to be loud and to be drunk at Augusta, you know?
Okay, ban list, Brandon T.
Yeah, BT not coming back. Hovsey with Tiki, cross him out by extension. Rondé, he can't come. Nobody's coming. All right, let's get the, not the update, let's get into the Denver Nuggets coming up next here. So, Jamal Murray down, out for the season. If you took the Nuggets seriously before the injury, where are we now? I mean, are they just immediately on the scrap heap, or can they maybe piece something together and remain interesting? Remember, there's a lot of injuries in the West. Can they somehow piece something meaningful together? We'll get that coming up next. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. All right, so let's face it. Sometimes it just sucks to be a sports fan. There's no way around. Hey, you've seen it on this show. You've seen it in real time when we were at the Super Bowl a couple of years ago. And in real time, I reacted to the trade of Kristaps Porzingis, somebody I thought, you know, was going to elevate the Knicks and be, you know, one of my son's idols. And, you know, I was ticked, right? Sometimes that happens. Sometimes you're having a good season. You're on a nice run. And then, boom, out of nowhere, a devastating injury happens. And that happened last night in a meaningless moment of the game between the Denver Nuggets and the Golden State Warriors. And Jamal Murray is out, obviously, for the rest of the year. They were playing well. You know, they had won 8 out of 10. They're a 4 seed, so they're still holding on to that upper half where they would host first-round playoff series. You know, this is odd. Coming from somebody who has probably given the Nuggets more national love, if not more than anybody, as much as anybody, probably a better way to frame it. I've given them a lot of props, and I've made sure to always insert them in the conversation for years now. But it's over. Mm-hmm. Now it's over. Yeah. Now their entire season changes. The entire complexion of what they can accomplish changes. And at this point, if you're a Denver Nuggets fan, you have to hope you win one round, and that's it.
Yeah,
the upside.
You're hoping your big man, the Joker, turns into a uber superstar and just garnishes all the attention, wins the MVP, makes this season worthwhile in some way or another, because they just lose too much scoring right now. And in the NBA, if you can't do that, you're just not winning. I don't care how fundamentally sound that you think you are or how well coached you are. If you're not scoring, you're not winning, period. These teams are, you know, throwing up 120 a night in some places, and especially once some of the better teams in the West get healthy, as we expect that they will, the Lakers, et cetera, then it's just going to be too tough of a road, I think, for the Denver Nuggets. But that doesn't mean the season's lost.
The season's lost. You only get so many chances.
I mean, like a lost year.
I think it's a lost year.
I think they made strides and proved, to your point, to what you're saying, that they can be a viable team in the Western Conference, even though there are some like massive, you know, superstars in that conference still. They prove that they can do it. They can compete. They can be there. They're not just going to be that team that's languishing around the 7 or 8 for the entirety.
But they weren't that last year. They weren't that the year before. They proved that the last couple of years. To me, this is a complete waste of the season.
But did they feel like they had a championship viability those last couple of seasons?
But I thought they had a chance to get to the Western Conference Finals. Like, they were the 2 seed behind the Lakers. They were a 2 seed. I mean, here's the problem now. So you've got Jamal Murray, who was having his best season, right, in terms of points, assists, steals, percentage from overall and percentage from behind the arc, rated number one. One of those he was tied for first. In his career, he's had the best season that he's had so far. Mm-hmm. Real palpable growth. So now it's late in the season. Is he ready for training camp next year? Probably not. I mean, I know the ACL is a little different than it used to be, and he doesn't necessarily have to be ready for the start of the season, but you know, it's going to take a little while to, you know, trust his body again. And, you know, there's no guarantee that you get back to this point. Like, if you said, okay, right now, next season, are they 34-20? Are they a top 4 seed? You know, based on the path that Murray's going to have to go down, I would say probably not. Because Dallas is going to get better. Lakers are going to have Drummond. I mean, they're going to, like, they're going to be good. You know, and these guys will be healthy. I don't know. I think this is a real sad day for the Denver Nuggets. I do.
Yeah.
I don't think you just hit the reset button next year. Oh, let's go. We're good.
Well, you can't because he's likely not to be himself. Like, he'll be back probably November, maybe even late October if things go exceedingly well. But he's not going to feel like himself until January, until 2022. Which is, you know, a third of the season's already, you know, started to click through. So where are they sitting? But I guess we won't really know that until we see how they finish out the rest of this season, BT. Like, we're just assuming that they're going to fold in a sense.
Yes, I am.
I mean, you kind of have to because of what I just mentioned, the scoring side of this. You just lose too much of that. But does Porter step up and have, you know, more of a role? Maybe. I can't predict it. I don't know. I don't watch this team on a nightly basis to say, yeah, I've seen this kid. And if he gets an extra, you know, 10 minutes and like 5 shots a game, you know, he's going to just excel. And, you know, they're not going to miss a beat. They're going to miss a beat when they lose one of the great young players in basketball.
Yeah, I would put money on Porter, you know, stepping things up. I'm not worried about him. But, you know, here's the one thing. And I said this in the first hour of the show, but it's worth repeating because the disparity is stark. So far this year, the Joker and Murray have played 1,363 minutes together. All right. Their net efficiency rating is +11.5. Tremendous. This year alone, with just Joker, and that's obviously what they're looking at the rest of the way this year, which is 550 minutes. So roughly one-third of what Joker and Murray have played together. Joker's played by himself. It's gone from +11.5 to -2.1. I mean, that's daunting. Yeah. And I don't know if Michael Porter's going to cover that up. It's too late. You know, there's nobody to really buy out. There's nobody to trade for. Trade deadline passed. It's just one of those years where you only get so many. And again, it's not like, you know, Joker's 31.
They're still young.
I know, but I just think at some point Dallas is going to surround Doncic with a squad. I think at some point the Pelicans are going to be loaded. I think the Grizzlies are coming. The Warriors next year will have their act together because Klay's coming back, and they'll kind of hit reset. I just don't know why. I feel like they're going to get lapped a little bit here, and it's unfortunate because they've been really good. Yeah. Really good.
Now, we mentioned this in the first segment when we just brought it up briefly. Coach Malone keeping Donovan Mitchell in while this game was basically Jamal Murray in while this game was basically over.
Yeah.
You have a problem with this or no?
What was the exact score again? I know it was late. It was the final minute, I think. But what was the exact score?
I'd have to look.
What was the final score of the game? I don't even have that in front of me.
Yeah.
I mean, it was only a minute to go in the game. I'll look it up here, Teague. So whatever the final score was, it was probably – it had to be in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
Let me see. Let me just see here. Come on, go back. All right. So it was they lost by 9. Mm-hmm. You know what? If the score's –
It's still in reach ish.
Yeah, and even though they're not going to win the game, it's not so egregious where you're like, dude, you were sleeping at the wheel. What are you doing? You had a chance to rest him, a chance to avoid injury. I absolve Malone of any. He's going to feel terrible because in his mind he knows, all right, we're not going to win the game. Well, you know, man, if I would have taken him out, but who knows? Are you predisposed to it? You never know.
Yeah.
It wasn't even like it was a violent game. He just went to take off. He was right in the paint.
Yep.
He went to elevate, exploded. Yep. Perfect angle, wrong time. So if it was 131 to 102 or, 126 to 97, well, then we have a different discussion. I absolve the Denver Nuggets. I absolve their coach of any wrongdoing.
Yeah, I do as well. I just wanted to see because some people are getting on him about it. You know, the game, they weren't winning. You should have taken him out.
Yeah.
But it was close. Anything can happen at that point. You knock down a couple of three-pointers. All of a sudden, it's a three-point game as opposed to a nine-point game. And you still have a shot here. Fouls, who knows, missed free throws.
Never know.
You have to play that way.
I agree.
Especially against a team you're supposed to beat.
Yeah.
Who they ended up not beating because obviously Steph Curry, who we talked about earlier, scored 53.
53. Now, you see it a lot more in the college game where they'll foul, they'll extend the game. Once in the NBA, they kind of call the horses off. You know, if you're at like 20-something seconds and it's a couple of possessions, let them play out. You'll even see the coach. He'll go, no, don't just let them. Like college, it's different, which is why it's always nice to play the over in college, even though I don't touch the games because I do them. But a lot of people who do bet college basketball, not a bad move to bet the over because of the constant stoppages and procession to the free throw line. The NBA, you call it off. I get it. They weren't going to win. I think that's unfair. I think that is far too deep in the woods, and it's almost like you're looking for a hot take. You lost by 9 points. It happened toward the end of the game. Let's be fair to Coach Malone. Unfortunate, yes. Reckless, no. No way. That's great. Not cool. We're not gonna tag him with that. All right, Teak, let's get the update from Ack. We'll come back. We'll hit the blast on a busy Tuesday. Here's Ack. A lot of baseball going on, Ack, right now. All right, Teak and Tierney here. Hey, this weekend, the PGA Tour is back on CBS. Many of the top golfers in the world descend on the famous Harbortown Golf Links course in Hilton Head, South Carolina for the RBC Heritage live coverage beginning at 3 Eastern, noon Pacific, Saturday and Sunday on NBC. So the Nets did not play yesterday based on the events in Minnesota. No event, nothing. You know, the Wild didn't play. Twins obviously canceled first. The T-Wolves followed suit. So Kyrie Irving was not supposed to play yesterday. But because there was no game, you know, I was curious. He's not playing today either. So they started at 3 or 4?
Yeah.
4, I think.
They're in the late third quarter right now. The Nets are destroying Minnesota. 100-70, or by 30 right now.
No Kyrie. No Kyrie did not play.
Yeah, KD is playing. He started, actually, 24 points. And Joe Harris, a UVA boy, 5-for-8 from three-point range. He's got 23 points.
There you go. But no Kyrie Irving. We'll see. We'll see if it extends beyond beyond this game. I'm not sure, but we obviously spent a lot of time on that yesterday. All right, man. Good show. A lot of content. How about we hit the blast? See what we got. You ready?
Let's do it.
Let's go.
So many topics, so little time. We give you 5 stories in 5 minutes, but don't take too long or you'll suffer the buzzer. It's time for the Blast with Tiki and Tierney.
All right, so the Falcons, they've got the fourth pick coming up in the draft, and GM Terry Fontenot has said that the Falcons can stack good quarterbacks, end quote. Now, when we had Arthur Blank on, their owner, joined us back in February during Super Bowl week, he gave us an honest assessment of where their franchise stands with Matty Ice.
Matt is going to be 36 in May. He's in great shape, probably the best shape he's ever been in. He's playing at a very high level. We have no plans on him not being our quarterback in 2021 and beyond. But at some point, you know, whether in every business, whether it be a football team or a normal business as you might think of it, you have to prepare for the future. And, you know, with proper coach management and general manager management, you want to have a succession plan, a healthy one. You know, and Matt's certainly aware that that is a possibility.
All right, there you go. So what would you do with the fourth pick if you were Atlanta? What would you do there, Teak?
I'd probably draft a quarterback, BT. I think Atlanta doesn't want to be in that position anymore. I think Matt Ryan is level-headed enough to understand that that's the situation. It's a new regime. Yep. It's a new, I think you're trying to say era down there in Atlanta. And Matt Ryan, by no fault of his own, may have expired it. He could be useful somewhere else, but I think they're going to, and he'll be useful there for probably another year, maybe even two.
Yep.
But I think they're going to draft a quarterback at four.
I don't think they're going to take a quarterback. I disagree. I think they're going to either stay at number four and take somebody like Pitts or whomever else they covet, or drop back a couple of slots and add to what's already a pretty talented roster. You know, they've got a lot of good players. And to me, I look at Matt. Listen, we all saw the end of Eli here in New York and New Jersey. Like, to me, Matt Ryan is so much better than Eli was at that advanced state. Like, I don't look at Matt Ryan like I did Eli at the end and say, man, I mean, you got to get rid of this guy. He's holding you back. Now, Eli didn't have anything around him, to be fair. No question. But Matt Ryan could still play. I have zero doubts that Matt could still play. So I'm just going to enhance my roster. The best step, trade back and get some more players. So we previously discussed the partnership between the CFL and the XFL. And one option the two leagues are considering is having their two championship-winning teams face off in a bonus title game. Would you be interested in watching the XFL champ take on the CFL champ? Not really. I mean, I'd be lying. Not really. Not even a remote interest. Don't care. Nope. Once the NFL's done, I'm done. I don't care about the XFL. I don't care about the American Alliance, whatever it was called. I don't care about the Canadian Football League. I don't even really care about spring football at the major colleges. I care about right now. I care about this thing in my hand, which is called baseball. Every big golf event and the NBA playoffs, which are rapidly approaching. I don't care about football that's not the NFL.
Yeah, the question is, do other fans care about football that's not NFL football? I think the answer is probably somewhere in between. I think out of the novelty of it would get people interested and maybe flick it on. Whether or not it's lasting and impactful, that's another question, because there's no context around it. Like, I don't know the history of the the Canadian Football League champion, and I likely won't know the history of the XFL champion. So it's just kind of two teams playing each other.
Pretty random.
Yeah, it'd be random. Like, I'd watch it just to say, yeah, that's kind of cool. Yeah. But I would have no idea what's going on or how any of these teams got there. It would be a daunting play-by-play job, to be honest with you.
Well, which rules? Because the Canadian field is different.
True.
So there's some nuances you have to iron out.
That's what I mean.
And I got you.
And it'd have to be explained as the game is going on. Yeah. That'd be a tough job for the play-by-play guy.
I'm going to take a pass. Brandon Ingram, Zion Williamson carried the Pels to a 7-point win over the Kings last night. Ingram dropped in the 34 spot while Zion had 30 on his own. Could Ingram be a legit number two for the Pelicans down the road, and we assume a team that has championship aspirations?
Yeah, of course he can. I mean, he's been growing over the last couple of years, meaning in his game. He's long already, and he's a willing defender, if not an elite one. He can score. Eventually, if he truly develops, he feels like he could be like KD light, because he can make his shot on anywhere. But he's got to expand his range, which he started to do. Absolutely, he can be a two.
Here's the problem, though. KD light was KD was the one. And then, if you want to say some games with the Warriors, he was number two for sure when Steph or Clay took over. But KD light I need, if you're KD Light, you got to be my three. I don't know if KD Light is enough to win a championship. And I really like Ingram. You could even make the case that right now, I know that Zion's on a nice run here in terms of putting points up, and he's incredibly efficient. I think 63%, whatever it is, from the field, even 30-something percent from downtown, even though they didn't take a lot of shots. You can make the strong case that Ingram is actually the number one on most nights now. You can make that case, but I don't see that duo as a championship duo. Maybe I'm misreading the room. I don't see that yet. No.
That's not the question, though.
What?
It's not about the Pelicans, right? Could he be a legit number two? I think the answer is yeah.
No, but if you're number two on a 40-win team, who cares? If you're number two, like I take that as if you're a number two, then you're a number two with a means to a path to a championship.
Yeah,
otherwise, nothing else matters.
Good point.
Like, we always talk about two in the context of championship pursuits. Like, so-and-so needs a legit two. You know, like, that's how I take it. And I still, no, I don't, right now I don't feel that way. No. All right, in the same game, Pelicans-Kings, Sacramento star De'Aaron Fox dropped in 43 on just 30 shots. Well, I don't know if I'd say just 30 shots. That's a lot of shots. What is the ceiling for Fox? The ceiling for Fox is, I think it's higher than Ingram. Let me start there. I know they're totally different players. I think De'Aaron Fox is, I think in 2 years, we're talking about in the West. And I really like Ingram. I'm not trying to disparage Ingram. But like Zion will be certainly one of the best. Booker, if they don't trade him, and they shouldn't. And I think De'Aaron Fox is, I know I'm missing a few players. I love Halliburton, that draft pick. I think De'Aaron Fox and Halliburton, That's a duo to mess with, or not to mess with, but they've got to get the rest of the roster right.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't love what they have around Fox. Fox is a beast, though. De'Aaron Fox is a star.
Yeah.
Love him.
Yeah. I mean, what's the ceiling?
Ceiling's 30 points a game. His ceiling's between 25 and 27 points per game average, and, you know, six or seven straight, maybe more All-Star games, to answer it more specifically.
But he's not doing anything on his own like LeBron had to, like the superstars of the league had to. Can he be a star? Yeah, of course. And make the All-Star in time. I think he's got to work his way towards that, but he's not there yet. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that, as you're right, BT, has to do with the surrounding cast. Any of these young kids, these young stars, they can surprise you on a night and drop 45 or 50. But doing that consistently is a different story.
True. All right, 10 games to start the season. Mike Trout, still looking pretty good. 29 years of age, hitting .394, four bombs, eight ribbies, an OPS of almost 1.400. And by the way, Ohtani had his home run last night, Mike Trout, number four. Ohtani had three ribbies for the Angels. Do you know his line drive double? The exit velocity was 119 on a double.
Wow.
119.
Yeah.
That's freakishly fast. Do we think it's possible that we still haven't seen the best of Trout as he enters his prime? What do you think, Teak?
The best of Trout?
Yeah.
I think we've seen the best of him. The question is, how long can he sustain it?
Uh-huh.
You know, I don't see him all of a sudden hitting 55 home runs and, you know, having an OPS of 1.3 or something like that, something out of this world. But the question is the A's. The A's.
Angels.
I mean, the Angels right now sitting atop the West, BT. I didn't realize this until I saw the note that CBS sends every day. They're up there alone atop of the AL West, and Ohtani's batting .333.
Yep.
Right? He's obviously doing his thing on the mound as well. So this team is finally interesting. It's really early in the season, but like the postseason viability that we always like long for a Mike Trout team finally seems like it's coming.
Yeah, and I don't even think Rendon's really hitting the cover off the ball yet. I think he's actually off to a pretty subpar start. You know, Rendon's going to get his act together. He's a professional hitter. He doesn't run anymore. Mm-hmm. All right, early on he stole 49 bases his second year, then he stole 33, and then he kind of stopped running. But when I look at his, and I'm looking at him now, when I look at his actual best season, I mean, do I think, you know, the most home runs he ever hit was 45, but he only had 104 RBIs. His most RBIs was 111, but he only had 36 home runs that year. Do I think that he can hit more than 45 home runs this year and more than 111 RBIs? What's his career average? About 305. And hit 320 or 330? I do. Hmm. And if that's the case, then that would be the best season that he's ever had. So You know, I think you'll see a little wear and tear in the outfield and less aggression on the bases. But in terms of hitting, it looks like he's probably poised to have his best season. So I would say maybe yes. I would say yes to that with the asterisk. The running will stop because it already has.
Time's up. The blast is over for another day.
How about this text message I just get from my wife? Mm-hmm. Is this a great text message or what? You ready for this? I'm going to make a lot of people jealous.
Go ahead.
A lot of men jealous right now. You ready? She sent this at 5:36 p.m. Eastern, so about almost 20 minutes ago. You should go and hit golf balls at the club. It's nice out. I mean, come on. All right, Teak, I'll see you, buddy. See you later, buddy. How great of a text message is that?
She's testing you to see if what you'll say. No, honey, I'm good. I'll stay
home. She already knows the answer. She's going to see the exhaust from the back of my SUV because the answer is absolutely yes. And you know what's crazy? I was thinking about doing it. I'm like, you know, I haven't really done it. I had baseball on Saturday, mm-hmm. which I'm coaching. I had football on Saturday night. I'm assistant coach Sunday. You know, Jen and I had a couple of drinks. I called Tiki Saturday night. We were both feeling pretty loose. With the Hibiki. The Hibiki was on point. I was talking to your buddy Burke. He and I were rapping for a little bit. That was a fun conversation. So needless to say, Sunday I didn't do much. Plus it was raining. So I really haven't gotten hit many balls because you know why? I went and I still not hitting them well, man. It's like every year I just can't.
You gotta just go play. You gotta just go play.
It doesn't work that way for me. I'm not the same as you when it comes to that.
Go play nine holes. It'll make you feel better because it's better than getting frustrated standing still.
Yes, I do know.
And by the way,
you
only have like 2 days all week that it's not going to rain because we're going to get intermittent rain. Beautiful day, rain.
I saw that. And tomorrow night's going to be really nice, but I'm coaching baseball. We have practice at 6, right?
That's right.
When we get off the air, that's the team, the T-ball team that I'm the manager of, so I'm going to be there obviously from the start. Yeah, I think I will go knock around a few shanks.
Nice.
Why not? Put the headphones on. Put some shorts on.
Nice.
Yeah, I'll enjoy the sun. It is pretty nice out there. I've been cooped up for a couple days.
I'll go sit on my deck and knock back some whiskey.
At 6 o'clock at night, whiskey? Stronger man than me. All right, have a great night, Teak. I'll see you tomorrow, buddy.
You too, brother. Hit it straight.
Yeah, okay. Everybody have a great night. Safe, sensible, sane. We'll see you. Bye-bye.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.